Hello and welcome back to Even More News, the first and the only news podcast. My name is Katie Stoll.
I couldn't agree more with everything you've said so far. I'm Cody Johnston. Hello.
Hi, Cody Johnston. Today, we are joined for the first time by writer and host of the Full Court Chat podcast, Dave Schilling. Hey, Dave. Hi.
Hi. Hello. How's everybody doing?
Be okay,
so
all things considered.
Good.
Cody's tired.
Oh, sure.
I think being tired is perfectly reasonable these days.
I think it is, too. There's a lot going on. There's a lot to process. We're personally pretty busy. You know, traditionally, this is your first time here on our show, so you may not know this, but traditionally we start every episode by wishing our listeners a very happy whatever holiday it is. And this week I kind of was going around in my head, like, I don't know if that feels appropriate given how heavy everything has been. But then I took a peek at my source for holidays, the National Today calendar, and it's a real good one. So forgive me, guys. I just want to wish everybody a very happy National Old Maid Day. Because, yes, apparently there is a holiday for old maids.
Good.
But they say it, they in their description of the holiday, they reference it as, you know, while it might not seem like a flattering term, it's more complimentary than other terms like spinster.
That's nice that the people who do not have husbands have a holiday. But,
yeah.
I mean, what are we celebrating? We're celebrating the fact that they are old and unmarried? Are we celebrating,
you know,
their independence? Are we celebrating
their independence, their contributions to society when they don't have to use all their time raising children? I don't know. Stuff like that. That seems good.
Could we change the name to National Unmarried Person Day?
I think that would be far more appropriate and less offensive.
Also, it looks like childless is also a factor. It needs to be. So
yes, you have to be childless. You're not an old maid if you have a kid.
Right. I don't know what that term would be if you are and do, but it's important.
A single mother?
You know,
I think it's called a single mother.
Single mother, yeah.
Let's call it National Dolly Parton Day. How about that?
Ooh.
Way better.
Is that?
I would say that every day is that, but yes.
You would? Mm-hmm. That's surprising.
Mm-hmm. I'm pandering. Don't worry.
Before we move on, I want to say a very quick thank you to Raycon. Raycon wireless earbuds for supporting Even More News. Raycon earbuds start at about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market. And you get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/evenmore. More on that later.
Oh, can't wait.
Dave, I know I mentioned this to you before, but since the pandemic, we have started our episodes by just kind of checking in with our guests and seeing how they're doing, what they're doing with all of this quarantine stuff. And now, of course, there are the events of the past week adding to that. And so, hi, hello, how are you?
Well, thank you for reaching out. And it's good to know that you care, first of all. That's beautiful. Second of all, I think overall, I'm fine.
Yeah.
I think fine is the best we can do right now because there is obviously a low level of dread that everyone feels about getting sick, about the police breaking into your home and rousting you out of your bed and asking you for your papers. There's fears about, you know, am I going to have a job tomorrow and will I be able to pay my rent? It's a big sort of buffet of sadness and a shame that buffets are probably going away because one day this analogy is not going to be useful anymore.
R.I.P. Soup Plantation, although you have an awful name.
Yeah.
Terrible name.
Truly awful.
I mean, thank God they closed before the protests,
I know.
Right?
Oh, God.
They would have. That's where I would have
ransacked.
Started my protest.
Yeah.
Honestly, it would be a great place to start, though. You'd get all of those breadsticks and everything.
I am allowed to say all this stuff because I am black, so no nasty email saying Dave made a joke about soup plantation and protests. I'm allowed to do that.
Back off, everyone.
Amplify this voice. Anyway, I'm trying to be productive. I'm trying to you know, now that this conversation about racism and police brutality and the kinds of things that African-American people and all people of color go through every day,
yeah,
with police issues, with over-policing, militarization of policing, and the lack of diversity in so many industries. You know, now that this is a conversation, I'm trying to do things that are positive. And so I started a program. It's in the very early stages to get scripts from African-American TV and film writers and try to get people that are in the business, people that are successful TV and film writers, people from late night, people that write on sitcoms, people who write on dramas, to read these scripts and hopefully give notes that are useful and then connect those writers with people who can actually help them get
idea,
career opportunities that they need. Because right now, unfortunately, most of the opportunities for people of color are contests. They are, you know, paid sort of script reading services, which not everybody's going to be able to afford. So doing something like this that is free, that is one-on-one and personal and actually has, you know, people with careers that are going on that are generously giving their time, I think is so much better than the kind of impersonal, transactional nature of most script reading and most mentorship in Hollywood. So I'm trying to do that. I'm also just trying to work on my own things, and I'm trying to be as prolific as possible about writing pilots and, you know, doing this podcast that I started months before the quarantine started. But, you know, kind of finished it during the quarantine, and now I'm putting that out and just trying to keep forward momentum in my brain. I don't know if you're going through this too, either of you guys, but like there's a point when your mind can be overwhelmed by everything that's happening.
Oh, yeah.
You need to clear space for yourself.
It's just also just hard to turn off. For me, it's hard. Well, especially since we work in the news, following stories and trying to be on up to date on things, and it moves so fast. It feels like a short circuit sometimes. And I feel compelled to know everything that's happening. So I'm not always playing catch up, but it's impossible. It's impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah. And keeping the fear out of your head too is important.
Keeping the fear out of my head for sure. And there's been a lot of fear lately. I felt, staying at the beginning of the pandemic, I felt a lot of fear. And then you ease into a routine and you start to like metabolize it a little bit. And so it's there, but you don't necessarily always recognize it for me. It's like a low level constant. But then over, you know, the past or so, as tensions have escalated everywhere and there's been a lot of fonts here in Los Angeles, I definitely feel the fear in my throat again. And it's also, in this situation, it's also excitement. It's excitement at the possibility of.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the possibility, the optimism is starting to come out of this thing. And I think, unfortunately, this had to happen. Because we are so easily distracted. The NBA announced they're coming back, and I'm like, oh no, here we go.
right.
This is gonna grind everything to a halt because people are gonna be too busy
distracted. They have something to do.
Yeah, if LeBron James is gonna win his fourth championship or not. It's like, no, this is the perfect storm of opportunity for us to make real change. Because
stay focused.
No movies, no sports. You can't go out and go to bars. You can't go to restaurants. You can't do all the things that people do to shut their mind off from the inequality and the racism and the homophobia and the sexism and the horrible things that the world has created to keep us down.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I mean, on one hand, a little disappointing that it's taken a pandemic and, you know, people's pent up anger to make space for this explosion of action. But the other end of it is maybe that's a silver lining of this pandemic, although it is confusing because we have yet to see what the effect of these protests will have on the pandemic. You know, give it a week or two and we'll start to see what the transmission is like. But I don't know. I vacillate between being like a little bit bummed that it took this and also like, wow, maybe we're lucky this happened. That's a terrible way to put it. Not lucky. You can cut that. I'm referring to the pandemic. Just grateful that the time was right for people to be mobilized finally.
Yeah. And not be, like you said, like able to look away, even ignoring like all of the distractions that we give for ourselves in our lives to avoid, you know, the deep right. void of nothingness that the universe has provided everybody. Instead of I'm going to the movie, I'm doing all these things. But even aside from that, we go from story to story every day, seemingly like in the news. There's a conversation that comes up. And maybe a day and a half of conversation actually happens, and then we move on, and nothing is ever actually done. And this is just, a confluence of everything. And like we've talked about on this show before, I'm sure we'll talk about it later in this episode, but, you know, I remember when the Ferguson protests were happening, and having a similar feeling of like, oh, finally, like, people are gonna, like, right. see what's going on, and, like, wake up, and seeing all the footage of honestly, like a fraction of what we're seeing now from the police these days. But seeing that, I thought like, oh my God, finally people will see with their own eyes what we're talking about, what people talk about. And they didn't. But now they can't look away. And so, yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah.
It is a moment.
And I'm grateful to be a part of this moment. Interesting. I remember growing up and in my 20s and everything, there being something in me like, I wish people of my generation cared enough to stand up and fight for things like people of my parents' generation. And, you know, then we had Obama and everybody is complacent. You know, we've got a black guy in the Oval Office. And then after years and years of Donald Trump, of seeing people being upset, and there being protests, sure, but protests that were like planned in advance.
They were parades.
And everybody shuts things. Yeah, you shut things down for a day and then go back to normal. And we're angry at home, but like, what is it? What is the thing that will take us getting out of our homes? I guess it takes, it's just a relief in many ways to finally see people stepping up, you know?
We had to be truly made to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
The society that we created was designed specifically for pacification and keeping people from speaking out. And it took a pandemic. It took the wide distribution of that video. Mm-hmm. And us not having anything else to do to force
not being
people
able to ignore it.
Onto the streets. It's crucial, you know, to have that confluence of opportunity and lack of distraction. And so I'm glad it's happening. And I think another thing that's different this time versus Ferguson is the Ferguson protests were all kind of localized and it didn't spread to the extent that it is spread this time. It is remarkable to see, you know, that screenshot went around of CNN, and they showed a map of all 50 states having had a protest of some sort.
Yeah,
the fact that it got
all those red
that,
states. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. Usually you see that map and it's like, oh no, what's this mean?
But yeah.
That was really heartening and kept me going. On days when I thought, oh, I can't do this anymore. I got to go. I got to move to Zimbabwe or something. I can't live like this anymore.
Yeah.
But it is, it's hopeful and optimistic in my head right now. And it shouldn't be, but it is. I don't know why.
I mean, yeah.
Not even just here. Internationally, I'm blown away.
Everywhere.
Australia, London, Germany.
Yeah. Everyone.
Amsterdam.
It's everything was stripped down. And it was like, just like so many things happened that like the universe is like, no, wake the fuck up. Like, come on.
And there's so much video now. There was video at Ferguson, but there's video in St. Louis, there's video in Philadelphia, there's video in Los Angeles, in New York, in Chicago, in Boston, in Cleveland, everywhere. You have video of police officers abusing their authority, beating on people, shooting people, maiming people, and in some instances, killing people.
It's every 10 minutes. It's hard to keep up, honestly. It's a mess. We have a video coming out later this week where we tried to do a montage of like, here's like everything from the past few days. It was like 2.5 pages of just links. And then we're still adding to it because it just doesn't stop. And now you have more, even that, because it's so widespread, that means you have more like reporters on the ground, which means that they're getting more footage of it too. There was that one, it's so hard to watch. It was just like, there was doing a split screen, I think it was on CNN, and one woman was interviewing somebody on the right, and then there was this footage on the left, and in the like the small like left-hand corner, and in that left-hand corner, cops stopped a car that was doing nothing, and they like tased the people inside, and it was really, really disgusting and brutal. And it's like slowly you could hear the reporter in that shot being like, no, come to me, come to me, come to me. They finally see the whole shot. Those officers got charged because of that.
Good.
It's
encouraging that, but while people are watching.
But like, you know that there's so many videos of cops that we're seeing that will not face consequences.
Exactly.
But it is heartening to see stuff like that. We're like, they saw that. Imagine what happens when it's not on camera.
But and I think, you know, the presence of video is great beyond actually being able to charge these people. Because you're right, a lot of these instances of police brutality that are going on right now will not go punished. But because that evidence exists, people like Bill de Blasio or Eric Garcetti or any number of mayors, city council people, congressmen, state senators, whatever, you know, local politicians coming out and saying, oh, there's no problem. Yeah, we behaved, you know, the police behaved appropriately and maybe got a little testy, but, you know, they used restraint. People can finally say to hacks like Bill de Blasio, you're lying.
Yes.
You are coming on to television, stepping in front of cameras with journalists, recording what you're saying, and you're lying because we saw it. If you didn't see it, that is a dereliction of your duty as a public official. So I think finally people are going to start holding their local politicians to account and saying, we're not going to suffer through this anymore, and we're not going to elect people like Eric Garcetti who are wannabe celebrities or are more concerned with whether or not they're going to be governor one day or president one day to give a damn about what's happening in City Hall in Los Angeles or in
any other
city.
Take a stand on something.
Yeah. They've been beholden to police unions and boosters and you know, getting donations from these organizations for so long. They don't know how to be impartial. They don't know how to stand up to these people. It's almost like, and this is a terrifying thought, but there's some truth to it, that the police have more authority over our city than the elected officials do.
Absolutely.
Oh, 100%, especially when you understand that the police union is very powerful. And we're pro-union here, but
I mean, they arrested de Blasio's daughter, and then, like, he, like, threw under the bus. Like, police are in charge. Sorry, Katie, I interrupted you.
No, it's fine. I mean, yeah, exactly. But yeah, police unions are very control a lot. You know, you fire get a cop fired or whatever, and they help them find a job elsewhere. You know, they donate a lot of money to these politicians. They're beholden to them.
And now we can, like you're saying, we can see that they're lying. Like we always know, we know that. Like whenever I see a police statement, I'm like, okay, but like what actually happened? Because of course, but when you can see like de Blasio like talk about like the how the protesters shouldn't have been in the way of that cop's car who went through the crowd, things like that. We're like, well, we saw it and we know you're lying. Because there's always this sort of understanding,
right?
Unfortunately, where it's like people in power are lying to us. And we know that. And they know that we know that. And they know that we know that we know that. And
it's like that, I mean, yeah, friend's quote.
It's like this, like, we know, and that's the deal. And like, we care, but we don't care. And they know we don't care enough. And the deal has been broken.
Yep. They get away with as much as we allow them to get away with.
Yes.
And they have abused our trust for so long that we have no trust in any of our institutions.
Yeah.
And that is another reason why this is happening. Why we couldn't manage to control the COVID outbreak is because nobody trusted that the government was telling the truth about the fact that it was going to kill people.
Yeah.
Or that wearing a mask is going to help, or that staying 6 feet away from your neighbor is going to help. Like, people are so paranoid and so wrapped up in conspiracy theories and so distrustful of institutions, not because they don't have a right to be distrustful, but because the institutions themselves have buried our ability to trust them. That we can't accomplish anything in this society without trust in institutions.
Yeah, and or the institutions seem to have forgotten that they're here to serve us. They exist because of us, and what we're seeing over the past week, 10 days, is people taking that power back a little bit, you know, or showing them, like, Robert, and we talked about this on Worst Year Ever, our other podcast, and something that Robert, our co-host, had tweeted. Everybody knows not just how easy, but that it is possible to take over a police precinct.
Yeah, that happened. Yeah. That happened. And everybody in the country knows
that happened. And we know it. We need to get into some of the, well, we've been talking about the news, but I want to get into some of the news stories. And I'm going to start with this update on the Derek Chauvin charges, because after 10 days of national and, like I mentioned, international protests, yesterday it was finally announced that Derek Chauvin's charges will be upgraded to second degree murder, and the other three officers have also been charged. Let's see, this is from CNN. The former Minneapolis police officer who pressed his knee into George Floyd's neck was charged with second degree murder, and the three other officers on scene during his killing were charged with aiding and abetting, according to court documents. Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison's official announcement of the charges is expected to come Wednesday afternoon, more than a week after Floyd was killed while in police custody in Minneapolis. Okay, so the other three are now charged with aiding and abetting second-degree murder and aiding and abetting second-degree manslaughter. So that's good, you know. That's some progress. That is something. We've also saw reports today, right before we started recording, that the FBI is reopening Breonna Taylor's case. So that is also exciting, and it's worth taking a moment to celebrate this because we did that. You know, everybody mobilizing, Black Lives Matter, all the work that everybody has been doing.
Yeah, and staying in the streets
has made this happen. Staying in the street.
It's that thing where, like, you see, like, okay, so it takes how many days of this to get this very simple, like, obvious thing to happen? And it doesn't seem like that's going to be enough, because it's not enough.
It's not. This is just the tip of the iceberg. You know, this George Floyd was the catalyst for the last 10 days of protests, but it doesn't solve the systemic issues that got us to this point. You know, and at first when this news broke, I was like initially like very excited and happy. And then I was worried that we would see an immediate drop off in the protests. And it kind of remains to be seen how these developments will affect the protests going forward. But I will say that so far, people still seem pretty undeterred, you know. In fact, I'm hoping, and what I'm seeing is that they start to expand and can be focused on what's happening within local governments. For example, in Los Angeles yesterday, around 10,000 people gathered downtown to protest outside of DA Jackie Lacey's office. And for any of our listeners not familiar with Jackie Lacey, she's been in office since, I believe, 2012. And in that time, there have been somewhere around 600 deaths at the hands of officers, and she has brought charges against two of them.
That's an F.
And what?
I don't know the exact percentage, but
that
I
is
feel
a,
like
a big
a
fat fail.
Yeah. I feel like it's an F minus, maybe.
You know, again, we saw massive organizing from Black Lives Matter to bring people out. You know, we've seen a lot of people taking action to stop the proposed California budget, which you know, in the Los Angeles budgets, which would be raising the salaries of our police force and slashing funding for schools and community services. There was also that LA, I mean, I'm giving a lot of LA examples here. You guys may have seen that LA Police Council Zoom meeting that was open to the public.
And
hundreds of people called in and berated them. It is beautiful. If you can take the time to look up some
Please.
Of those clips, they are chef's kiss. And it seems to be somewhat working. Garcetti announced on Wednesday that they'd be cutting $1.5 million from the police budget, which would be redirected into programs
that's
for communities
enough.
Of color.
But I mean, all right, okay, but like that's not enough.
It's like they still have somewhere almost a $2 billion budget.
Well, it's also a mindset. It's not like okay, we'll do this thing. It's fundamentally changing that. Well, so that's
yeah.
Like, I think one of the tactics that I think like maybe more center leaning people and definitely people on the right have been trying to do, and they sort of try to do this whenever something like this happens. A go to example I think is like a Ben Shapiro type of person who when this started basically like I see all these people saying why is everyone so mad? Everyone agrees about Floyd's murder. Like everyone saw the video and they're all appalled. So what's the thing? And they could get away with that, I think, back in the day of like, okay, well, this is this one instance and then they fix the instance and then that's it. But they know this. They know what they're doing. They try to pretend like they don't understand that this is an example of something that's a deep-rooted problem. That is what we're actually trying to address. And yeah. I don't think that's going to work anymore. Of saying like, well, all right, we charged them.
Because you can see every day those videos in every city in America. You know, like you can't isolate it to one instance because now people can point to all of these different things, and this will continue to happen. You know, I don't think it's dawned on politicians yet, the ones that unfortunately for them were in office and were negligent when this happened, is that. Now that people understand, one, that it's happening, two, that it's been happening for a long time, three, that can happen everywhere, and four, that they can film it and put it on the internet and people will be mad. This is going to happen more than it ever has, and it will continue to compound on itself until there is actual change.
Yeah.
You know, if you go all the way back to Rodney King, that was lightning in a bottle for that moment in time, that there was somebody there with a video camera that filmed it, that did the right thing, that sent it to the news media, that got it out there. But that couldn't happen every day after that.
Right.
It couldn't that couldn't be a movement. It was the beginning of something though.
And now we all carry little cameras in our pockets.
Yes.
And we have social media.
The techno police state made a mistake giving us all cameras.
Yeah. This seems like a good time to discuss something that the response from local governments to all of this. But I think it's worth mentioning that they've pretty categorically blown it. and that I think that a lot of the responses that we've seen.
Well, I think the thing I want to talk about specifically is, you know, how do we take this moment and apply it to local elections?
Yeah, I think that's a great thing to focus on.
Because, you know, right now we're focused on protesting, donating money, amplifying people's voices, being heard, all of that stuff. And there's been a lot of negative rhetoric related to people saying, well, just go out and vote, and all you have to do is vote, and it's going to change everything. That's America. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be both. You have to be working all the time. We've gotten into this mentality, and I think this is, you know, either intentional or just a byproduct of the way in which the human brain works, but we've gotten into a cycle where we don't pay attention until 4 years are up on a president's term, and then we go to the ballot box to vote yay or nay on if this person is going to stay in office or who's going to be the next president or whatever. That's what we are now conditioned to do. Or, you know, every 2 years, if you even care about your senators or your congresspeople. We are not conditioned to care about who's the mayor of Los Angeles, who's the mayor of New York. New York used to be one of the most politically engaged cities in the country, and turnout for local elections continues to plummet. In New York, where the mayor of New York is one of the most important municipal jobs in the country, because of the economic impact of New York City on America, because of the number of people that are there, the symbolic nature of being the mayor of New York. So the fact that we continue to see fewer and fewer people voting locally is really terrifying. But you have to ask yourself, this is the question I want to pose to you guys, is like, where are the candidates that are going to be able to not only articulate a progressive change message, and also raise enough money to compete against the mainstream candidates and get the media coverage necessary to get people behind them to make it feel like they have a fighting chance? So what I'm really describing is, like, who is the Bernie Sanders of local elections?
I think there are a lot. We're actually trying to do that this year. That was the plan, at least, until all this happened, was to highlight these local elections of people, because and I think that part of that is that more and more people realize this. Because the money issue, I don't know, because, you know, Bernie Sanders had some really, really amazing fundraising going on, and we all know how that shook out. But more and more people are aware of this issue now, and this idea, like, we've been talking about all these awful mayors, they're Democrats. People are realizing that, too. Finally, like, my God, it's finally. Because there are a lot of progressive candidates that are challenging these sort of like incumbent Democrats and establishment Democrats, because as we see, they don't do anything. They don't do what we need them to do. People are getting more engaged with that just naturally because of this and because of, looking at what Garcetti's doing in de Blasio. It's amazing that the two, like, it's LA and New York, and they both suck so bad.
Like Cody mentioned, we want to be focusing on that a lot. Also, right before this hit, we did an interview with Katie Hill on Worst Year Ever, our other show. And it was interesting, you know, this conversation about getting involved with politics at the local level. And that's daunting. It's also off-putting because there are a lot of, like, centrists or people that hold on to the, you know, the old way of doing things that kind of run the show. But the only thing that changes is getting involved, is getting, starting to have your voice counted as part of the party, you know, and a lot of our listeners don't identify as a Democrat, you know, but it is also the party that is most closely to our views, and that has a viable chance. And so it is about us stepping up and taking leadership roles.
Yeah.
Yes. But to the conversation about the elections as well, I think really important that we are paying attention always the way we're paying attention right now. The fact that all of those people called into the Zoom call with the police commission made a difference. And also,
these positions we're seeing.
Who the candidates are that are on the ballot getting signatures, you'll start to have an idea of who to throw your weight behind. It's vitally important that people pay attention to candidates for, you know, DA, like, and not just check a box when you show up to the ballot. You're not just saying, I'm here to vote Dem all the way down or whatever. You're like, you know who you're voting for. And also, you're not, if you're out and you, like, especially after Trump got elected, I think that especially here in LA, people always everywhere had petitions to be signed to get your name on the ballot for this or that. Well, you know.
Yeah, it's gotten a lot of people involved, and, like, yes, like you're saying, like, even the other positions, like, people seeing, I think today, like, seeing Amy Klobuchar at George Floyd's funeral, not great. And that was, you know, that was a position, and you seeing like, okay, well, now you're a senator and you might be the vice president. Here's what you did before and you sucked at it. Maybe we should care about those people at that time, right? And there are people, like, I think just the pushback against the idea of like, well, these are the Democrats, you know, like Nancy Pelosi is being challenged by Shahid Bhattar. And I think for a long time, people have this like...
I thought she wasn't going to run again.
Oh, is that true?
No, I mean, when she got elected last.
Oh, okay, okay. But like, I think people originally, at least for a long time, see stuff like that and see these primary challengers and are like, well, that's... It like they view it as irresponsible and not helpful, because if you're not only fighting Trump, that you're not fighting the fight, right? Which is really, really wrongheaded, I think, and short-sighted, and just like, well, no, you need to have somebody in that position that will do the fighting, because obviously they're not doing it. And then like Charles Booker is trying to primary and get the nomination to take on Mitch McConnell. The more establishment type milquetoast Democrat is Amy McGrath, and maybe she'll win. But there are these races where there is a clear choice of like the same stuff, just with a different letter by their name, or actual change.
Right.
People, just to say one more thing about that, you know, I will see all the time people on social media, or God forbid, sometimes in person, saying to me like, you know, you need to support X person, Charles Schumer, or you need to support Nancy Pelosi, because they're in the trenches every day and they're raising money and they're fighting for these things and they're good people. And when things like this happen, every single time there is something that rocks our sense of morality or disturbs our spidey sense for whether or not democracy is going to survive the 21st century, they're silent, or they give a statement that is not enough, or they don't, you know, push legislation,
or they do a photo shoot with a Bible,
posing with a Bible like this is, you know, this is some sort of, you know, diss track album cover that you're making.
Yeah, we need an epic clapback gif to like
with this. Like, it's all
It's meaningless.
Did they start doing that after the president did they not see the reaction people had to the president doing it?
Well, no, she was trying to, like, troll him.
Oh, she was trying to troll him.
But that's not what we need.
Yeah, that's her whole method. No. She wasn't.
Exactly.
Yeah. Also, this is not a game. I need her to stop trolling people.
It's not governing.
No.
That's
to
not
these,
it.
To these entrenched, wealthy Democrats, it is a game. And it is some sort of perverted chess that they are playing with each other. It has nothing to do with me or you or the people listening to this show. It only has to do with their egos and whether or not they're in power, and whether or not they're on the cover of a magazine, or whether or not they're being talked about on 24-hour cable news, or whether or not people are retweeting them or yes-queening them or whatever it is. Like, it doesn't matter. That stuff doesn't matter. And it took us having to watch a video of a man murdered over the course of almost 9 minutes for people to be like, oh, you know what? Maybe Nancy Pelosi isn't my hero.
You mentioned 24-hour news, which is another thing you wanted to talk about, and we're going to. But first, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk about that.
Bye. Whether you're working from home or working on your fitness from home, you want what you're listening to be what you're listening to, not what your neighbor standing 6 feet apart is listening to. So if you're into wireless earbuds, maybe get these wireless earbuds into you.
Gross, Cody, come on.
Yeah.
But yes, we have teamed up with Raycon, and they are offering 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/evenmore. They're extremely comfortable, perfect for doing the long list of things you can do with listening devices.
Unlike some of your other wireless options, Raycon earbuds are both stylish and discreet, with no dangling wires or stems to distract anyone during your video calls. Like right now, you can't see them, can you? Katie, can you see them?
Mm-mm, I can't.
Yeah? But I'm wearing them.
Oh, yeah.
Also, the company was founded by Ray J. So if that does it for you.
Yeah, Cardi B is obsessed with Raycons, I hear.
They also started about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market. Their everyday E25 model, which I have in my ears right now, have 6 hours of playtime and also let me hear things.
Get the latest and greatest from Raycon. Get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/evenmore. That's buyraycon.com/evenmore for 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. Buyraycon.com/evenmore. I truly love these earbuds. They're great.
They're great. No, you're right. I agree. They're great.
And we are back. Promised. As promised.
More news.
For even more news.
Specifically.
24-hour news media. That's a transition right now.
All
right,
I'm done.
I said transition right now, and I didn't mean to say that. It's too bad we're doing this live, and there's no way to edit it. Dave, why don't you tell us what you were hoping to touch on with the 24-hour news media, and we'll...
Okay, yeah. I mean, I feel like we are seeing 24-hour news make itself irrelevant. And I'm amazed that these corporations are so
sure.
willing to make themselves irrelevant. Because instead of... Here's what we've seen on social media. Here are the videos that are circulating. This is what's happening. Here's the actual news. It is, we've got a camera placed in front of some stuff happening. There's stuff happening. There's some things on fire. There are people throwing things.
Yeah.
And here's Don Lemon, who's going to tell you how sad it is. Or that democracy is being torn asunder. Or that we are teetering on the edge of fascism, or whatever it is. It's just commentary, right? There's nothing else about it. And that's what I wanted to talk about with you guys, is why is it that 24-hour news has just become this slow hum of insanity where people talk over it and describe how sad it makes them feel without any sort of context or truth to it.
Well, it's the show,
it's
right?
Like
we were talking about, it's the same thing with like the Republicans and Democrats. It's one party. They're different, obviously, but like they're all playing the same game for the same kind of reasons. And they 24-hour news is the show. They need the thing to be sad about and talk about how they're sad about it. And then it'll be over, and then there'll be another thing. And if they don't do anything about this, you know, in 5 months, there's going to be it'll happen again, and then they can do it again.
It's performative grief for the purposes of getting ratings.
Yeah,
and you get to hide behind we're journalists and we're trying to be objective here. I will say that I'm not a fan of Chris Cuomo, and I don't watch his show regularly, but I've caught it a couple times.
Huge Andrew Cuomo,
big Cuomo sexual.
Oh yeah, it depends on the Cuomo.
God.
He has done some good segments, you know, pushing back a little bit on the narratives that come out of the 24-hour news bullshit. But I do agree with you. And it's been frustrating to watch their coverage of this. I mean, of everything always, but this specifically, this is something that we get into on the video that will eventually be out this week. It's a long one, guys. You know, just focusing on this idea of there's the peaceful protesters and then there's the looters, right? And oversimplification and a villainizing of the looters, which delegitimizes looting as historically valid form of protest.
It separates the two into two categories while also blurring the lines between them. So you have, this is the acceptable way to protest, and it's the peaceful stuff. And here's this other stuff that's going on, and that's the bad stuff. And they don't actually care about what the protest is about. They're fake. They're fake news is what's going on here. But also, they're the same. So then why are the police brutalizing these protesters? Well, because the looters. Well, they're not doing it to the looters. They're barely arresting the looters. We see nonstop footage of people looting. Where are the cops during that? Well, they're over there doing the protester stuff. So you have this distinction of like what's acceptable while also blurring the lines of who even is who and what they believe. So then nothing matters because it's just a show for them.
It's more about whether or not they can communicate the despair. You know, if I tune into one of these shows during a large scale protest that has turned violent in some way, I will hear about how America is dying, that this is the end of our country, that I feel hopeless. This is the end. What is there to do? And then people share it. I saw that Don Lemon clip 100,000 times that night when it really got bad. And then I saw, all the clips of Trump's speech and the people being tear gassed. And no one seems to understand that this is a for-profit business that is hoping that sadness is going to keep you glued to the television. Instead of these organizations either exposing what's really going on by taking citizen footage of real atrocities, that are everywhere, committed by the police, and shining a light on that, or giving us some semblance of actionable items that we can do to make the world better.
And that's where we're getting all of that information now. The stuff that's vital, that is actually making a difference, is coming from Twitter. It's coming from people sharing experiences. You want to know what's going on at a protest? Well, you follow somebody that's going and live streaming the protest. I keep mentioning our co-host Robert from Worst Year Ever. He's been on the ground every day in Portland. That I'm shocked to hear that people in Portland don't know about. We can talk about this in the other show as well, but he filmed the police tear gassing people in their cars, kids in their cars, viciously beating an old man and a young woman, throwing herself on top of him to protect him, and then beating her instead. And my friends that live in Portland that, have young kids and weren't able to go out and protest, shocked to hear that. They had no idea that that is a thing that happened. But you follow people that are actually doing the work and showing up and talking to people and listening and learning, and you get a wildly different show, experience than what the news organizations are showing.
I was going to say 24-hour news wants you to feel sad for a minute and then move on, because there's no money in positivity. There's no money in, this is what's happening, this is reality, and this is what can change. There's no money in that. And that means that they're going to continue this cycle. And then incrementally things get worse because nothing changes, because we get sad for a little bit and then we move on. So I don't give a shit what Don Lemon has to say about the end of America or the, teetering on a dictatorship, because it's not helping. It's not helping to do that. Because we can stop all of this. We have the power to stop this. This is not the end. This is the beginning of an opportunity for us to change things for the better. And I don't think any of us have the luxury of giving up. None of us have the luxury of throwing up our hands and saying, well, he did it, folks. He gave one speech and tear gassed some people and he did it. Because that's how these people win. And 24-hour news is complicit in allowing that to happen. The New York Times.
Yeah, they have that luxury.
All of these people have the luxury. The Times has the luxury of publishing an op-ed from a person who advocates for martial law. And he can say he doesn't, but martial law means putting the military on the streets of America to control the citizens.
Yeah.
What an asshole, by the way. Jesus Christ.
We are, of course, talking about Senator Tom Cotton. If you guys missed this outrageous, I honestly couldn't read it. It made me nauseous getting a paragraph in.
Unbelievable. The next or the second to next president of the United States, Tom Cotton. I barely watch 24-hour news because I think it's disgusting. It's frustrating to watch, and it's just gross propaganda usually. I clicked it on maybe 2 days ago. Katie knows what I'm about to talk about. There was a segment, and it was very brief, because what you're talking about is, go to these places and talk to people and, get these experiences. And they do that sometimes, and it is so frustrating to watch because you get they get these people who are starting to talk, like, give these impassioned speeches, and in the middle of it, every single reporter is trying to interject and interrupt these people, like, when they're in the middle of these, because they want the sound bite, but they don't want them to go too long, or they don't, like, they don't, they're still trying to, like, maintain it and contain what's going on. But there was a segment where they were at a protest, and it was at night, and it was just a peaceful march forward, basically. And the reporter went up to this kid, he's like this 19-year-old black kid, and he was just marching along, had a mask on, he's wearing a hoodie, had his phone out, and the guy was like, "So what's your name?" And the kid was like, "SJ." And he's like, "Okay, what's your real name?" He's like, I don't want to tell you that. He's like, well, why not? And it's a very aggressive, weird, uncomfortable back and forth of like, tell me your real name.
No, like, that was bizarre.
It was so bizarre. And the kid was like, well, I was told that that's like not safe to do. And the reporter literally said, oh, please. So it's just very weird, contentious. And then the whole interaction was him saying like, why are you here? He's like, oh, well, because Black Lives Matter and this is happening. And so I'm out here. And he's like, okay, well, then why don't you want to give me your name? And his answer was, well, do you know what happened to the activists in Ferguson? And to a lot of listeners, the answer to that is a lot of them are dead. In
mysteriously
situations where it's like, oh, they were burned in a car. Oh, they like shot themselves at home. Like a lot of them have died in situations that are odd. And this kid brought that up. And the fucking reporter interrupted him to suggest that he wasn't telling him his name because it was CNN specifically. It was this bizarre, like, victim narrative of like, oh, everyone hates CNN, yeah. CNN's guy, surely that's why. And he was like, no, he was literally explaining to you what the reason was, but they don't care for the actual answer. And so the whole thing was very weird, right. And it was like clearly framing this kid as like, and he's, the last question was, are you prepared to be arrested for this? And he's like, yeah, that's, I mean, if I get arrested for protesting, that's what happens.
Yeah.
And then immediately, as soon as it was done, a guy in a yellow vest swoops in. It's like, sir, that is not the message we want to be giving about this protest. And he, 2 minutes about why it's peaceful and nice. But what was said in the previous interview was, I don't want to give you my name because I'm worried about my safety. I'm here because Black Lives Matter. And if I get arrested, that's what happens. There's nothing bad about that. There's nothing to like counteract there. It was just a very clear like example of they're doing a propaganda.
A real journalist would have followed up on what he meant about Ferguson.
Anything. But like it was very clear, like framing him as like the threat version, right? It was the distinction they're trying to make. They're peaceful protesters, and that's valid. And then they're like the angry like looters, and it was very clear that's what he was trying to portray him as. Literally like young black man in hoodie with a phone peacefully walking. He was trying to demonize him.
It's the narrative. They have a narrative, and they've chosen that narrative. And there is a lack of empathy in journalism. As someone who had to suffer through it for a few years, I could see it. I could see the kind of detachment and the distance that a lot of people had. And you know, I was lucky. I was at The Guardian, which is one of the better global news outlets and newspapers in the world. But the New York Times, you know, it's a local newspaper that has become a national source for news. And that's not good because that means everybody who works for the New York Times is in some way connected to the city of New York and the city of New York's interests and the city of New York's condescension and pretension. And you see it directed at the flyover states, quote unquote. You see it directed at Los Angeles. You see it directed at anyone who doesn't live in New York. And that is why someone like Tom Cotton can airlift themselves into the New York Times and publish.
Also, he's a senator. Posted on Medium. Like, say it out. Like, what? Why does that need to be in the New York Times? You're right.
He can just say it on Twitter. He can say it on television. He can do anything. He doesn't need the bully pulpit of the New York Times.
United States senator. Yes. Needs to be published in the New York Times. Unbelievable.
I want to transition to our last topic before we get to some listener responses to our question this week.
Future President Tom Cotton.
Yeah, future, maybe. Oh God, no. We already mentioned briefly Trump's fucking photo op where he gassed the protesters to get the photo op, and I don't want to talk about that. But you've seen a lot of condemnation blow back from this choice. One of it from General Mad Dog Mattis, who said a lot of things, but one of the quotes here is, "Donald Trump is the first president in my lifetime who does not try to unite the American people, does not even pretend to try. Instead, he tries to divide us. We are witnessing the consequences of 3 years of this deliberate effort. We are witnessing the consequences of 3 years without mature leadership. We can unite without him, drawing on the strengths inherent in our civil society." First of all, we're witnessing the consequences of way more than Donald Trump's time. okay, but point taken. Yeah. Yes, the man is a dumpster fire, although you did work for him for a while. And then John Kelly came out in support of Mattis and a couple GOP senators. And that's interesting. Brave. Is this what it takes for them to push back? I doubt it.
The gophers always poke their head up when they think that it's safe and there's no lawnmower coming.
Yep.
It's safe. I can peek around. And then, you know, Obama made his address yesterday at the time of this recording, although it's not like Obama hasn't had issues with this as well. You know, Ferguson and Standing Rock both happened during his administration. You know, but he called, you know, he expressed his support of protesters and called for, you know, reforms to start addressing issues on the local level, you know, which is nice words, but what does that actually look like? You know, what does a national approach to this look like? And then Joe Biden also gave a speech, and it was a good speech. You know, it's considered one of the best he's made during the campaign, probably ever, basically calling out the president and urging Congress to take up measures, that he's calling a down payment on what is long overdue, you know, and it includes police reform bills, outlawing chokeholds, banning military weapons to police forces, establishing a uniform use of force standard. And he promised to create a police commission, a police oversight commission in his first 100 days as president. You know, he's promised Black communities that they would be at the center of any economic recovery plans that his administration puts forward. And, you know, this is another thing that you'd wanted to talk about, Dave, but just a general conversation of Joe Biden, the man to take us through this time. It's.
Are you excited for Biden?
Are you
Well, the first thing I want to say is the idea of a police commission is funny because I don't know if people realize this, but there's a police oversight committee in Los Angeles that's existed for quite a while. And, that didn't stop any of them from overstepping their bounds.
You
and
know
using
what that commission is
force.
Who's made up that commission is made up of?
Various boosters.
Yeah.
Various wealthy people.
That'll do it.
Yeah. It's people who are looking for something to do.
So
with
the
their
people
free time.
Who the police are actually there to protect?
Yes, the LAPD is just one prong in a system of lackadaisical civic services in Los Angeles, because, you know, at the end of the day, this is a city that is beholden to developers first, to business interests, and so business interests want strong police forces because strong police forces prevent, in their mind, crime. And when there's less crime, there's more economic activity. And more economic activity means that their developments, their you know, big high rises and things like that are full. The restaurants are full that they build, the shopping malls or outdoor shopping destinations are full. All those things. You know, there's a reason why we have a subway system expansion coming. Because developers decided this was going to help them build new buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And people like Garcetti pushed for stuff like that because they knew that they could get it done. They could be a thing that they can say that they accomplished, but that developers were willing to get on board. So, you know, that's what happens when you have a police commission, is that they inevitably get wrapped up in the political and business interests of the governing body that they're supposedly overseeing. So I it's great that Joe Biden says that, but an oversight committee is not going to solve any problems.
Just, yeah, what does that actually mean, tangibly?
Doesn't mean a whole lot. But I think the initial question that you gave me that I totally went off on a tangent on is this guy the right guy? And I am grappling with that all the time. Yeah. I voted for Bernie Sanders in the primary. Yeah. I donated. I did everything I could for Bernie Sanders. I don't like Joe Biden. I've never really been particularly fond of Joe Biden. In the numerous times that he's run for president in my lifetime,
wild.
This is sort of like, right?
Yeah, you're just digging through the recycling bin, or like the, you know, at GameStop when they've got the like $5 video games that are all like Big Buck Hunter 3 or, you know, Jeopardy the video game or something.
Right. Like, games, yeah, Last of Us 2 isn't out yet. So, what, I don't know. Is this all right?
Yeah. Oh, they have
Lee
Austin
Carvel's
Powers
putting challenge.
Like, they have Austin Powers pinball. Great. Right. So that is, Joe Biden is the Austin Powers pinball of politicians. That said, there are benefits to him running. Even though he has a hard time with oration, that he is not an ideal campaigner, that he is prone to saying things that he then has to apologize for. We're in a situation that will probably carry through into the fall where there are no rallies, where the only thing that he can really do is give prepared speeches on video.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah, you know, he's a well-known well-known commodity.
I mean, it is a good point. In the absence of
him having to be off the cuff a lot.
Yeah, he doesn't have to do that.
Yeah.
The biggest thing that he has in his favor, whether we like it or not, is that Joe Biden is incredibly popular with African American voters, who are going to be the most fired up, the most engaged of anybody in the electorate this year because of what's happening right now. You know, those people were the ones that elected Barack Obama. Not white women, not, you know, college-educated white people. It was African-Americans who were excited to vote for the first black president. And that excitement from that group trickled down to the rest of us, and we all got fired up about it. Bernie Sanders, I love Bernie. I'm an African-American voter in this country who loves Bernie Sanders, but he was not able to get other people in other states that look like me to vote for him. And maybe that's a problem. Maybe there is truth to the notion that he was not going to excel with those voters.
Yeah.
But because those voters still love Barack Obama, and they remember Joe Biden as Barack Obama's buddy from those 8 years, he has a chance to win. And he will appeal to those people who inexplicably flip a coin every year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's really interesting. This is a uniquely beneficial to Joe Biden, period. No public gaffes, less easy for him to make it anyway. He doesn't necessarily excel at live.
He still manages to
campaigning
find his way
and rallying.
To do that, though.
He does.
Like I've seen videos of him that the campaign literally shares. Like they're like, we're gonna share this, and it's clearly a statement that was planned ahead of time. But he still doesn't do it quite right, and it's like you didn't do a second take of that. What are you doing with your time? You're living in your basement. Just do
napping.
A second take.
Taking naps. Like, taking naps. Having pudding.
Just yeah. Having a little. Well, it'd be ice cream, I guess, for him. But yeah.
Yeah.
But like, it's this is a really tiny thing, but it's his avatar on Twitter now. I don't know if you've seen that. It's him wearing
with
a
mask.
And,
yeah.
Yes. And it is a piece of art. Because, well, first of all, the day before he changed it, Britt Hume made a big deal about how he's wearing a mask in public. It's like, this is why Trump doesn't wear a mask. Look at him. It's like trying to embarrass Joe Biden. And the photo that he chose Joe Biden, I think listeners all know how I feel about Joe Biden. He looked like a badass. Like, it was a great photo. He had the sunglasses on, he had the mask, and it was, like, even. It was a very good photo. If anyone in his campaign was good at the internet, they would use that exact one. Because, like, you co-opt the thing that people are trying to attack you with, right? You're like, yeah, I do look like that, and it's awesome. So here's my new avatar. But what they chose was a photo they clearly took on purpose that's head-on, and the mask is really askew.
It's really funny and stupid looking.
That it's pulling his ear down. I don't know what...
this is an important rant.
It's so unimportant, but I think it speaks so well to, like, the campaign as a whole. And, like, him as a metaphor. Like, it's him. It's like, yeah, it's kind of, like, lopsided, and they're not trying too hard, but I guess it's okay, and, like, maybe it'll work.
Yeah.
But, like, it's just... It's that where it's like you can't even, I don't know, it's unimportant. You're right. I'm sorry. It's just the funniest photo I think I've ever seen.
I think it's definitely something, you know, people should think about that are hoping one day to be involved in campaigns is, you know, how do you communicate what you want to communicate about a candidate through social media? It's important.
Yeah.
It's why Hillary Clinton had such a hard time with social media mm-hmm. during her campaign is because they all thought that they had Barack Obama and they had Hillary Clinton. You know, right. You can't just take all the old Obama people and say, work your magic.
Right.
Because
he was
right. It's completely different.
He was part of it.
You have to lean into the things that those people are good at. And for better or worse, the Trump campaign leans into the things that he is good at.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately for us, thank God, the one benefit of this quarantine is that he can't have his rallies.
Yeah.
He's impotent. And that's why that photo op happened. That was what that was all about.
Right. He needed an unforced error.
He needed to do something that he thought would make him look tough because all of his toughness was projected through those rallies. He doesn't have that. So instead he created this horror show. This is his ghastly tableau that ended up backfiring on him completely. So I think Joe Biden kind of steady and doing his best to just be an adult instead of trying to do what Hillary Clinton did, which is seem cool and go on Broad City, is the best option.
Yeah, for sure. Like head down, power through. Like don't try to make it about you. Don't, you know, because, Donald Trump can... He can take care of it himself.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very clearly. I do think that Barack Obama would have nailed Pokemon Go to the polls, though.
Yeah, it would have felt cool coming from a guy like that or from someone, you know, the avatar for him on social media. Just because he had that aura. But you cannot run every campaign as though your candidate is Barack Obama.
Yeah.
He is literally a once-in-a-lifetime politician. Yeah. Whatever you believe about him as an actual president is not related to what he could do as a politician. And what he could do as a politician is break through what we have seen this last weekend and will continue to see for the rest of our lives is a horribly racist country. He made that horribly racist country elect him president. What he did was remarkable.
It really was.
From a political standpoint.
Yeah. As a candidate, just like... unparalleled, really.
Maybe not the world's best president for a number of reasons, but boy, man, that is probably the greatest politician of my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Dave, we finish all of our episodes lately with reading some
a brief prayer to Joe Biden.
Please don't shit your pants on TV.
Oh my God, please,
Lord Biden,
just still the bare minimum.
I'm waiting I can't wait for if they ever do debate in person. I think it's 50-50 on whether or not he will try to shove Trump because he gets agitated so easily, you know?
Oh, yeah. He's a hothead.
I'm waiting for it. Yeah, right.
That actually was not the prompt for this week. But no, our prompt this week was basically like, what have you learned about yourself, you know, and your privilege or not since George Floyd's murder and the protests that have erupted, also, you know, not everybody's able to get out in protests. How have people been supporting the movement? And we're going to read a couple of them and we can chat about them if it strikes you. Okay. Cody, I know you have one. Do you want to read one for us?
Oh, well, yeah. So this is from actually our friend Christian.
Oh, yeah. I was going to read that one too.
Who responded. Oh, okay. Well,
but I'll let you do it. Hi, Christian.
Hi, Christian. It's just very relevant to what we're just talking about. I've learned that we need to do more than just elect Democrats. This is something that has become more and more apparent since 2016. If we want real change, we have to get the influence of money out of politics, because red or blue doesn't matter when they're paid by police unions. But on the positive, I've learned that I have the mental energy to be going to school full time, handle a big life change, and go out and protest all at once, because honestly, this kind of struggle and fight against injustice fuels me rather than draining me. Hashtag no justice, no peace. And I think that really just speaks to, yeah, just like, again, a lot of people, I think, are now seeing this.
Yeah.
Every day I see people like sharing, like, I was talking to like my uncle and he was saying this radical thing. And it's a big waking up moment for a lot of people who I think are unexpected in some ways. So, not that like that revelation from Christian is unexpected, but like I think other people in other generations and demographics are sort of realizing these sort of things.
Yeah. Yeah. This one is also from Twitter. It's from David Hoteling. I've learned that I've been silent too long when confronted with people I know making racist statements. I let it go because I thought they're just ignorant / old fashioned. I'm now being as loud as I can, donating, listening, and pushing the agenda of people I know that are oppressed. I think that this is something that a lot of us are grappling with, running through all the times when they could have spoken up, when they could have done more. Or also being confronted with our own biases and the things that, you know, you knee-jerk do, or if somebody points out to you that something is a little racist, being defensive and saying, no, that's not my intention at all. Well, okay, but learn. Shut up and listen and learn from that.
I remember, and like my dad's pretty like liberal, progressive, and whatnot, but you know, boomers gonna boom. But I remember last year, just randomly, he was like, so I saw this play, it was like local play about microaggressions, and then he started like talking about it, and like he like really got it. And it's like that kind of thing where it's like, oh, something clicked. And now he sees it and is aware of it throughout his life.
Yeah, there's been a lot of responses from people saying that they're realizing how hard it is to have these conversations with their parents, with their family members, and that they're learning. Some people are making progress and feeling positive about that, and some people are feeling frustrated. This is from our Discord, from ChrisM142. I've learned that I am much more useful on the ground than I thought I would be. I've been going to some of the protests here in Oakland and helping medics hand out food, water, masks, and providing basic first aid when needed. And when I'm not there physically at the protests, I'm helping people on the ground keep an eye on police movements so that they can try to stay safe and not get kettled in. Thank you for doing that. It's brave of you. It's hard. I read this because we've also gotten a lot of response from people saying that they don't feel comfortable going out to the protests. Let's not forget that we are in the middle of a pandemic. Side note, if you have been protesting, I think it would be a good idea to get tested, you know.
Unless you live in LA and there are no testing facilities.
Because they were shut down punitively.
Jesus Christ. Doing war crimes at us.
LA burn.
I love collective punishment for... God, unbelievable. If you get arrested, I mean, you know this, but like,
right.
the real, like, obviously there's risk in what's going on, you know, wear a mask, do all these things, but like the cops arresting people, that's infecting people.
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
Locking
them
up,
but you know,
them all together, like that's what's.
So I share that to say, I think that we all take different roles in this, you know. You might not be able to go out there physically. Well, then what are you doing from home? You know, a lot of people participated in the social media stuff that's been happening. That's That's great. It's a start, you know. It's not something that we just do because we're supposed to do it, though. It's a thing that has to become a part of our lives.
You
know?
Yeah.
Well, seeking out. Go ahead, Cody.
Well, so there's this other from our Discord, Dermagio, speaking to that, who says, more of a reaffirmation of what I already knew, that I'm a supporter, not a fighter. Donating money, documenting local protests, talking, high stress seriously impacts my health, so marching and all of this is too much for me.
Right.
And that's, yeah, I don't know, that's, it's, I think it's good to be get out there, but if you know that about yourself and you're still doing what you can and know that about yourself.
This one's from our Patreon and goes along with what we were talking about earlier about media, is from Paul Merritt. That merely sharing evidence of police brutality is helpful, that I can support without any money by streaming the right content, that I can support bailing protesters out wherever they're wrongfully detained, and that I can go 3 hours by bus to protest for the first time in my life. Paul, that's awesome. But yeah, that we can take situation, we can take control, we can use the cameras in our pockets, we can be vigilant and aware and step up and watch things and step up and not stay silent.
And don't shame people for what they do.
Yeah.
As long as you're doing something, there's no shame in it. Even if you're just saying Black Lives Matter on Twitter. Like, there's no shame in that.
Yeah.
It's not embarrassing. It's not
cringe,
posturing or posing or performative. Yeah, it's like, enough of that. That is a cynical sort of attitude to have of, oh, you're not doing enough, or you're not doing the right thing, or you need to do this, or you need to do that. Like,
that's
the minute we stop shaming people for what they feel comfortable doing, is the minute the things,
right? Because it's more likely that if that happens, they're not going to do more, they're gonna do less.
Well, yep. I think that's part of what gets us here, right? You know, I've been having so many conversations with my family members, with white friends, with people of color. But like part of this is we learn from a very young age that there's something different between us as races. You know, it's be from representation on TV, or, you know, we learn about our history as we grow up, and there's this whole white guilt, or there's questions that we have, or we feel like we don't want to, you know, make things uncomfortable or say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing. And that's part of the problem. That's why we don't have answers to this. This is why this problem continues to be ignored. You know, you let that fear get in the way. It's insidious. Yeah, that's my little mini rant. I have this one. Somebody messaged me this. I'm not going to say their name, but they shared, I'm one of those guilty souls that cashed in on the Bloomberg campaign, but I kept the contact list from March, and I've been using volunteers to go through a 45,000 person phone list in the last week to get people out and sustain constant protests in Oklahoma City and Norman. We've made a Bloomer to Antifa pipeline. But hey, that's a unique and bold way to...
There's hope for everyone, even Bloomberg supporters.
God. Yeah. Dave, this has been so nice having here. We'd love to have you back at some point.
Of course. I have nothing better to do.
Hell yeah. Us either.
And that is a compliment because this is great. I have plenty of things to do, but they're not better.
Well, we'd be thrilled to have you back. Can you tell our listeners where they can find you online and plug your stuff?
Yeah, I am at Dave_Schilling on Twitter. That is my Twitter handle. And I host a podcast called Full Court Chat with Dave Schilling, which is a parody of inane sports podcasts where I have some really funny comedians and improv actors come on and play characters based on the obnoxious athletes that are constantly on SportsCenter. And I play a slightly less humble version of myself.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's great. I really think that people will enjoy listening to it. There's three episodes up. Just look for Full Court Chat on pretty much any podcast platform, Spotify, Apple, Google, all of those good ones. And yeah, I'm sure I'll be doing a million other things right. coming up Aww. Because I don't know how to stop working.
Love that. And I'm excited to see what you do.
Oh, and one thing, I just want to say this about the podcast, because this is the most important part, is for every episode going forward, as long as I'm doing this show, every guest is going to propose a charity or some sort of cause to give to. If it's a bail fund, if it's Black Lives Matter, if it's a local candidate. And so I'm going to donate $100 or hopefully more if I ever become very wealthy to each one of these causes. And then I'm going to encourage and publicize and try to get people, listeners, to donate to that cause that the guest picks. So for this week's episode, our guest, this comedian Kristen Studdard, suggested Black Lives Matter LA. So if you are listening to this and you want to donate to Black Lives Matter LA, that would be really awesome.
Man, I'm
very appreciative of
love that. That is a really cool way to use your platform that we should probably maybe steal.
It's not stealing. It is just taking a good idea. And making your own good idea. We need more good ideas in the world. That is all that matters. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Dave. We will definitely talk to you soon. And I just want to let everybody know that we love you very much.